When the student said we want to speak in our daily life, you know, what did they mean? And the responses range from giving us through the 12 months a long list of everyday activities, which I have sort of made notes on, an enormous number of things that they wanted to speak about, to something quite specific from a Chinese woman who was married to an Aussie, and this is what she wanted. And I said, if I could do that, I'd be a millionaire. So the task was quite hard. So the impact on me as the teacher, this is a story, it's a professional journey. And the impact of the action research continued because I taught the class for 6 months and then I followed them for a further 6 months. But in that time I followed the first class, I was actually teaching another class and I was teaching a pre. So I'd become interested in this, we want to speak. And I decided to do my own dual action research with the class that came after. So this is the sort of a mesh really, because it's about my journey really, you know, as a result. The journey hasn't finished. I'm not there yet. So the action research continued, and after each quarter I got interpreters to come in and ask the students I was teaching what they wanted, what were the problems, what was good and what wasn't good. And after each thing they said, if you want to speak. And then that moved on into a professional discussion with my colleagues. So I just wanted to make that point because the AMEP research and the opportunities it provides, they don't stop when the actual action research stops. It continues on. It sort of continues on, you know, through me as a teacher, and it continues on through my site, and ultimately it will continue on and spread out through the consortium. The class that I started with, there were 15 students that we followed, and it was a certificate high class. The youngest was 17, or actually she might have been 16 when we started, and the oldest was 74. I had two students with no education, and my most highly educated had a PhD. I had three Arabic speakers, a Chin Burmese, a Russian, a Guinean, 9 Chinese. 4 students had literacy issues and 11 students had difficulty speaking. And while I've got that slide up, I want to say that the older students, and I had 3 older students, if over 55 is older. They were older. They were actually in their late 60s and 70s. And those students were all volunteers in their communities, or one actually came back and volunteered with me in my tea class when she finished her hours. So I think under the previous government, I had a feeling that they were going to kind of be discarded as sort of not needing English anymore. And I think these 3 students, I mean, that's a very small sample, but they've shown that, you know, we can't discard and forget the older migrants, because really they contribute a lot. The Russian was doing 17 hours of volunteer work, and the other 2 were also doing, quite a lot of volunteer work. The one that actually ended up coming and helping me in the classroom was, you know, doing sort of 15 hours of volunteer work a week. The 2 students with no education, they were 2 students who were actually working. So you have to also be very careful about, look, I'm the first to make generalisations, but, you know, I had to take a step back and think, well, you know, my class didn't actually show any of those generalisations that I would have expected to make at this point to be true. Now, my teaching, I think I've been working with AMEP type classes for the last 20 years, and I've developed a very much a content-focused approach, very highly teacher-centred, in response to the DIAC review, where students were saying that they didn't understand a lot about the AMEP. I've integrated that into part of my class, that they understand what the services are, But I found, even though I integrated that and I did a lot of work on it, even though later I realised I didn't understand, and I used the volunteers in our interviews to discuss the services, they still didn't understand. So I think there are issues there that actually need to be dealt with. Then I did understanding NMIT and its services, because I thought that was like a little microcosm of society. You know, it was, because I work in a TAFE with lots of courses, and we had a library and student counsellors, a gym, recreation centre, restaurant, hairdressing, massage, canteen, you know, lots of things with brochures and the opportunities to go and make appointments and, you know, to renew books and join up forms to fill in. I used that as my, as a sort of like a mini society, I suppose, and then I dealt with settlement issues as well as they arose. So the model that I used and had been highly successful over the years was really for low literacy priority students, and often started with recounts. And a lot of materials that you look at start with recounts. Or even if they start with the dialogue, often they sort of, they turn them into kind of comprehension activities. So, well, that's how I started. And my speaking was things, you know, like reading out aloud, or if I started with pictures, sort of retelling the story of the pictures. But a lot of repeat after me. And that awful video that yesterday where she said, and boom! and the message was coming through, you know, we're happy with the teachers, but classes not meeting weren't meeting the needs. We want to be able to speak in our daily life. So I increased the opportunities for speech. Repeat after the teacher. lots of chanting, singing, information gap activities, surveys, peer dictation, conversations with the teacher, conversations with volunteers, and I'd done work years ago with the Silent Way, lots of, you know, bring out the Silent Way again. And the message, not enough. The big question, how do we help students to speak? Because I've given them all these opportunities. And they're still saying, yeah, but we want to speak. We want to speak in our daily life. And then they complained about memory. So I thought, right, memory. I spent a little bit of research. I've done an awful lot of research over the last 12 months. My holidays have been full of professional development. So I thought, okay, mime and action and chanting. Then I read a few. The more senses that you involve in your teaching, and you know, the better chance of remembrance. So we walk. You should see as we walk around the campus. We're going down to the library to join them all up. Monday, Tuesday, and they don't mind at all. It's like they were excursions around down the local community, you know, doing our network and direction. Fence, litter box, fence. I haven't missed an opportunity. So oral recycling of the language, endlessly. Now, still wasn't sort of working. Now I verbalise everything. Everything I do in that classroom, I verbalise. We are packing up. What are you doing? We are packing up. And people walk past my classroom and... And the idea was for me to stop talking, because actually, as Alan says, I can talk a lot. So I thought, okay, well, I'm still doing too much talking. So I thought, no, I get the model, get the best students out here, you're the teacher. So now instead of me, you know, doing the one-on-one, the students go around one-on-one. So, and now everybody's doing it. Even the weakest of students are modelling. The people that you would never dream that you would, you know, like, you know, put the cards in the bag. So, you know, often make games and things. Even the weakest student now has been able to go around, and people have been able to understand, put the cards in the bag. I am putting the cards in the bag. and we've discussed the time it takes to move something from your short-term memory to your long-term memory. And I think that's really very comforting for students to know that it takes a lot of time, because it is disheartening. I mean, I've tried to learn a bit of Chinese. All I can say is ni hao, and no one even recognises it. I don't know how long it took me to learn that one word. So I think they find a lot of comfort in that. And I use the... I have volunteer interpreters who come in, so I use that. We do a lot of work on that sort of stuff. The message still came back. We want to speak. I thought, I think I'm doing a marvellous job in this classroom. Still not happy. So then I thought, okay, they don't know how to learn. That's the problem. They've got problems learning. And the students in the interviews really couldn't answer what makes someone a good language learner. And I wondered, do we gloss over this in class, assuming that students understand how to do it? So I used interpreters, and we just discussed, you know, we sort of brought it out into the open about what they do and how they study. And I know the Chinese students go home, and I know they translate everything. I know. Now, I said to the students, and it came up in the interviews, when you go home, you need to reread what we've done in class. You know, read it at home, verbalise it. And I talk about the importance of verbalising things, so that, you know, not just sort of silently reading, but verbalising it, even if it's not correct. But they didn't do it. I mean, Alan and I asked them every single interview. So I thought, okay, they don't know how to, they sort of forget how to pronounce it. Okay, so all over the library. Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, borrowing books and CDs from the library to take home. Read at home, read home, you know, a strategy for reading at home. Then I discussed, I came up here to one of the quarterly meetings, and I thought, okay, I can discuss with them how they can better learn English. I made a huge list of ways that they could help themselves. And the best students did actually act on the list. They, you know, obviously thought, okay, I can do that, or someone, I can do that. So, and they were mentioned in other people's research today. One of them started to read to her daughter, and her daughter to her. That was actually identified on our list as a strategy. Another student, I said, have you got any friends? If, you know, if you need to have an Australian friend, a neighbour, and we discussed how to, you know, start making contact with your neighbour. So one of the students had lived here before, you know, had visited her daughter, and she made friends with an elderly Scottish woman, so she decided to look her up and started to visit her every week. And the Scottish woman was really pleased to have the company, and so she started to practice her English with the Scottish woman. Another student who was working decided, okay, she'd buy a cup of coffee at the coffee shop before she started work, and talk to the chef about how you make muffins and things. And so we did identify some strategies, but the students that took it up were probably the better students and had more confidence. But still the message came back, we want to speak. So then, I thought student isolation is a big problem. I mean, it's really a big problem. Their opportunities to speak are limited. In some cases, they only place that they spoke English was in school. So then I thought, okay, I'm going to inform the students of everything that's going on that's free, which I still do, and get them out into the community using language, you know, discuss how you can sort of start up a conversation with the person on the tram or the train, and to get out there. So I put them in pairs, sent them off on activities, and they went. You know, some of them went to the free concerts at the Maya Music Bowl, some went to Melbourne Uni to free choral things, a couple of them went to the BCA, the Victorian College of the Arts. So I got them out there doing things. I made sure that anyone entitled to a senior card or concession card had it, because often they haven't got much money, and money is a problem, I think, for some of these students. And for the Chinese students, funnily enough, even though they come here on a business sort of visa, money is a problem. It was quite enlightening for me. Even though they might appear to have money, and I've paid quite a lot to get here, money is a big problem for a lot of them. I taught them to use the internet and look up events programs to find free activities. We did a lot of map reading and diary work so they could understand when things were and you know, ring up and find, also we can bring, you know, phone calls, ring up to find out what time things started or to order programs. A lot of information gap. And the message came back, we want to speak. And then, after all of this, there's this awakening. It was more than providing the opportunity to speak. It was that thing which I had been avoiding. It was about teaching pronunciation. Now, I am the most appalling teacher of pronunciation, and I've always put it out there, and I've done everything. You can see I've done everything I can possibly do without actually tackling pronunciation. So now I spend my holidays reading through Headway pronunciation and tempo and trying to sort of understand the rules and when you do this. And I sit on the bed going, oh, and the dogs go, it's really very funny. Or I sit sort of sometimes just, you know, at depth, sort of, I think people think I'm quite mad. You know. But the students are now happy. I have interviewed the students, and for the first time, at the end of last term, they didn't say to me, we want to speak. They actually sort of feel, I think, that I'm giving them a voice. And I think the success of it is that because I've now got the pre-class, and I've moved some students on, the old students all come back. When they're not in class, they come back and sit in my class. So sometimes I'm going to turn around, I've got 15 students, and I turn back and I've got 25. And I think that is actually showing that, you know, whatever it is I'm doing, and I'm not, I can honestly say, I'm not a very good pronunciation teacher. English for daily life is what they were asking in the research. And I think Pam said to me, you know, ask them when they ask you, you know, if we want English for daily life, say to them, when you go shopping, do you read the labels? Yes. Can you buy a ticket for the train? Yes. Can you make an appointment to see the doctor? Yes. So they weren't really talking about English for daily life. They were really asking for pronunciation. But what they were saying is, we want English for daily life. We want to speak. My observations. I have to be very careful now about what I select as my topics because it slows my class right down. Because we learn, we pronounce every word we do, you know. And it goes slowly because they just take time to get it. They don't get it the first time necessarily. So when I recycle, I have to be careful that I don't choose, if I choose a topic that's not really, really necessary, I could spend an enormous amount of time because I've sort of invested that time in the vocab. Now I've got to, I can't just leave it, I've got to sort of turn into something. So I have to be really careful about what I actually introduce the students to. It really has to be the stuff that they need. And that's where I'm up to now, sort of starting to develop materials about what they need. You need to give the students, I think, the language to provide feedback. So I've done that. I've given them all those phrases that they need in the classroom to feedback to me so I can actually feedback to them. You know, so all those things like, Vicky, can you repeat that again, please? Oh, don't rub that off the board, you know, all those little things. And the other interesting thing is that you need to teach students to take pronunciation notes. Even though that's what they wanted, when I looked at their notes, they weren't even writing down where the stress was, you know, so you actually have to teach them and teach them how to use it. Now this, for me in a way, it presents a bit of a dilemma because we try and cover a lot of information in the AVP, and if I do a recount, I can base a recount on information. So I give that information, and that's the, you know, the model I've been using. It's been a highly successful model to get information out. Except, well, not highly successful because they didn't all understand the AVP entitlements. So now I think there's, you know, the issues. What strategies can we use to ensure that students actually get important information? Also, what modules are we enrolling students in? I mean, I think that's a really big issue. Students at the pre-certificate, I think there are only three learning outcomes that are related to speaking, 3 out of 21. How do we integrate pronunciation and speaking into what we're already doing? how do we support staff? Now, I put that in because I sort of feel like I need a bit of support myself. And fortunately, Beth is on the end of the email, so Beth gets emails next. Beth, how many syllables are there in washing? Where are they? The other day, I was at, you know, and she talks about now the queen, the syllable queen. But I was standing at the board, the syllable queen was at the board, with the crown on the head, thinking she was doing a marvellous job the other day. And suddenly I was putting, because I was putting washing and cleaning and mending, and I was standing there thinking, this isn't right. And I thought, what am I going to do? Do I just continue on? Do I say I've made a bit of a mistake? I'm not sure I've made a mistake. I don't actually know. So, emailed Beth, who very kindly replied quickly. But of course, if you make a mistake with the syllables, you make a mistake with your stress. So, and having taught literacy for so long, I would, as a literacy teacher, said it's wash in and taught them the in. So, but it's not, you know, and so you kind of have to unlearn your habits, really. And so I think staff, and the other thing is, you need to be confident that if you're having a difficulty, you can actually go to your fellow staff members and say, how do I do this? Without you being judged as totally incompetent, because you feel it. So the other thing is, if we expand the time we give to speaking, will that have an effect on the other macro skills? And of course, the settlement content. And youth classes, we're really very fortunate at MIT because we have some fantastic youth classes which have been running for 20 years. And they are for youth with disrupted schooling. And I worked on those classes for quite a few years. And one of the problems with youth classes is that you cannot stop them speaking. They talk all the bloody time. And what you want to do is shut up. So they don't have a problem learning to speak, really, in the youth classes. Because that's what you learn to speak, by speaking. So it made me realise that we should be putting the young people into our youth classes. And there wasn't enough data in the project, but I had one student that I did put into our youth class, and she really went ahead in leaps and bounds. So, I mean, it's only one example out of 15, but it did show me that the youth classes are very valuable for young people. And finally, I'd like to thank DIAC and the AMIC Research Centre, because over the years I've been very fortunate to be involved in a number of research projects, and I do really feel it's informed my teaching. And the action research project that I was involved in years ago with Anne Burns has really meant that over the years I've become the action research queen. You might be the syllable queen by the action research. And I've continued that methodology, even if I haven't been actually directly involved with the AMIC Research Centre. I've taken little projects and kept my teaching alive by saying, okay, this is a problem, what will I do, and working it out. And so I think that as a methodology, it can't be underestimated, and I feel very sad that it might be dismantled in these coming years, because I think that it's given lots and lots of teachers across the nation the possibility for professional development, which has supported the research centre, which we've carried on into our lives and which has benefited the students that we teach. And I'd also like to thank the Northern AMP Consortium and NMI2, who I work for. Thank you.